Hello and welcome to Scriptmate, the podcast for writers who dream of seeing their words spoken by paid actors on some sort of screen. I'm your host, Tim Schulberger, writer and founder of Write LA, a script coaching and screenplay competition site. Joining me is the highly skilled and wildly opinionated writer, Tony Giambuso. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Tim.
And this is a very exciting episode because Scriptmate has our first special guest. The delightful and talented Sean Woods, literary manager at Forward, is here to talk about all things representation. Good morning. Hello, Sean.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Welcome aboard.
I'm excited to be here.
You say that now.
Yeah.
So we'll, given that this is a special episode, we might as well move straight into talking to you about all things representation. So, Tony, do you want to take the first question?
Yeah. I mean, I'm just curious, you know, what inspired you to become a manager and, you know, what's kept you passionate, you know, throughout your tenure as this job?
Yeah. So to be perfectly honest, I had no idea what a manager did when I started working at a management company. I was right out of undergrad and found an assistant job. And a lot of the path in Hollywood is you start as an assistant somewhere and you figure out what you like, what you're good at, and then you kind of bounce around until you end up where your home is, whether it's an agency or whether it's a production company, a studio, what have you. But my first job was at a management company. And I didn't know what a manager did. But I quickly learned that it was this like pretty, you know, hands-on, very relationship driven, it was a relationship between you and the client and helping guide their careers. And I like the hands-on approach. We had like a handful of clients relative to an agent where they would have like 50 people on their list.
So when you say a handful, do you mean literally like five or six, or are you talking?
This is probably, I mean, there was probably at this point at this company where I started, it was like there was 25 clients and there was four or five managers a team working with all of them. Which is kind of a unique setup. But I like the idea that you were looking long term for the careers, but you were also dealing with them on a day-to-day basis. So that's how I kind of fell into it, and it just seemed to suit my personality and my interests fairly well. And then here we are a decade plus later.
So obviously now that you've been in it for a decade, how's the role, have you seen it shift or change or redefine itself?
That's a good question. I mean,
That's why I'm here.
Yeah. COVID was big for everyone everywhere, and I think that changed the dynamic, both on the talent side and on the list side. I don't know, like our focus here is on the writer side. I think ultimately at the end of the day, like what a manager does, they do a couple of things. Like one, you know, make sure your clients get paid. There's like a famous quote about that. Get the money, get the money, get the money. but also like take all of the stress that's like non-work focus specific off your client's plate so they can just do what they do best. So if you're repping a director, so they can just be directing or pitching or whatever, prepping their next project. And if it's for a screenwriter, like just so they're writing. Like, so at the end of the day, I think that's still the same. It's like, what are those impediments that are in the way, or how has the industry changed and how we talk about long-term strategy? Like that all, that minutia definitely changes, but like the responsibility of the manager, that hasn't changed.
So can I just, sorry, before we get to the next
one.
The difference between an agent and a manager, just for the, for those who are, you know, new to this whole business, can you define that?
Sure. I like to describe it as like two circles that form a Venn diagram, and there's absolutely going to be some overlap about what the two of them do. But there's also some differences. So I got called out at a film festival when I was on a panel saying this because an agent got really defensive when he's like, it's like, anyway, I'll explain the scenario.
What did you say?
I'll explain it. But one analogy is, and it's like super businessy, but if like the client's the CEO of their company, right? And everyone can kind of think of themselves as like, oh, like how am I building my career? What's my company? Your agent's your CFO and their job is to make sure that you've got money coming in, you have offers on the table. And your manager's like your COO, your chief operating officer, who's making sure that like, are we hitting our quarterly targets? Are we like building in the right direction? Even to the small things though, like do we pay like our utilities bill this month so like our office like has electricity, right? So I think of like the manager as the COO, which is like small things. Like I'll help and make sure that clients, the minutiae in their contract are like followed through, or if they get to set, or there's a fight about credit or something, like I'm in the nitty gritty. But it's also being able to take a step back and look from a 30,000 foot level. It's like, what are the projects we're saying yes to, and what are we saying no to? I always like to say we're defined as much by our no's as our yeses. And if you don't have that voice in your career to say like, hey, like this is a great project, but it's not for you. Why? Or hey, this one doesn't necessarily seem like it's a no-brainer, but here's why we should probably go after it. You can end up building a career that's not the career that you set out to do.
I see.
Are you – so it seems like you're definitely looking out for your clients on a macro level. Are you getting – in the nitty gritty in terms of like creative vision on the script level? Are you getting in there? Are you reading drafts? Are you giving notes? How involved are you in that?
Yeah. So I say every client's different, and what they need. And then like my job, I think is to like that Bruce Lee quote, like be like water. It's like, how do I best help that client succeed and grow? But typically, yes, I'm reading drafts. I'm giving notes. Mm-hmm. I very much see my role like short of like if I've ideated something or I'm producing something, and one difference is managers can produce and agents can't. I'm very strict. I'm like, I don't want to produce clients' work unless it's something that I've developed and then I've taken to a client. Like the client's never going to send me something. Like I will develop that script with the client. If they bring me something, that's my role. That's my job. But sometimes people want to get like – really into the specifics of like, you know, beat by beat and like, does this work? Do we think this works for the market? And sometimes people are like, oh, I just spec'd it. I didn't even tell you about it. Here's my idea. Like, what can we do with it? And then it's more like small tweaks from that stage or, okay, who's the best executive to put this script in front of?
So just on that, script-wise, because we think those are in the unsigned world. And by the way, I should point out that Sean has read, we ran a screenplay competition called Write LA, and Sean has read our winners previously. Thank you for that publicly. So we sort of are in the unsigned writer area. And the dream of unsigned writers is to be represented by someone like you, specifically you, because who wouldn't want to be rep by you? But I think the thought in the unsigned world is that a lot of the work is about the scripts I bring to you or the ideas, my spec script that you're going to go on and make into a film. But a lot of the job is not that, right? You're dealing with a lot of like open writing assignments and all that. Can you sort of explain like to someone who doesn't have a rep what life would look like with working with you?
Yeah. So what you're talking about is like from unsigned writers, like how do you write that spec that all of a sudden gets you all this attention and ideally a deal or a representative? And then once you've had a representative, it's how are you building that career? Hmm. Some of that initial spot or, you know, the initial impetus of coming up with an idea and either pitching it or writing some version of it, whether it's a spec or a short story or some other kind of creative way in, that doesn't necessarily stop or change. Unless you're inundated with writing assignments, and then that's great. But then that's also kind of when we get back to like, is that the career looking to build? Like, is that project that's set up at that studio that the producer's looking for someone to pitch on? Like, is that really going to be the next best thing that you write or that you want to put your fingerprints on? But to answer your question, like kind of the day-to-day is how can like a Tim, if you're a client, you know, Tony, you're a client, like how can we be talking about what you want to do and who can I introduce you to or introduce your writing to get them excited about you or want to meet you or like have you in mind for something that's in development right now or maybe 6 months down the road or 2 years down the road where you're just on someone's radar. And then it gets even more specific. It's like, oh, this TV show is hiring a writer's room. Like I know Tony's like really right for this. You have to read this specific sample or you know, it's more my job doing like the selling and trying to like put my foot in the door and be like, before you close deals with everyone, you have to make sure you've read my client.
So you have, you know, this eye toward the industry and you're trying to develop writers and then you're looking at, you know, new writers or talent that's coming in. Beyond the obvious, like, you know, a great script, some experience, some work ethic, you've read their spec. Now you're sitting down, you're meeting them, you're deciding, do I want to rep this person long term? Is this the person I want to go on that, you know, multi-year journey with? What are some other intangibles that a writer or any talent can bring to the table that you're kind of, you have your eye out for?
Yeah. So one, I mean this wholeheartedly, but like, don't be an asshole. Like yeah. I personally just have a no asshole policy. Most writers aren't, by the way, but like, I just find life to be too short. If I'm not looking forward to your phone call for some reason, then mm-hmm. I'm probably not going to be the best person to represent you. Yeah. The second thing is it's all about fit. Like, this is a personal relationship. I always tell clients, like, it doesn't matter, you know, I'm usually referring to this as an agency, but like, it works both ways. It doesn't matter like who you're repped by, like which company they work at. Like, if they're not picking up the phone and calling for you and know where you want to go and you guys aren't aligned on those goals, then it's just not going to be the right fit. Mm. So I think like a very open discussion about where that person wants to go and coming up with a realistic plan of how to get there, but also making sure that like my skills and where I am and, you know, my interests are best suited to help you get there.
So it wouldn't be, if you're having a meeting with a writer who's never been rep before and they have the script that you like, and you say, so where do you see your career? And they're like, I don't know, I'll write anything at any time for anyone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's probably, because they're like, they really want to work, that's probably not the answer that you're most looking for, right? You would like some more specific responses?
Or? Yeah, and I find that hard. And this works, you know, I always encourage them writers try to put themselves in the shoes of, say, an executive, which might be harder to do, but again, if you know people in the industry, you have conversations. I'll have the same conversation with an executive at a studio or a production company. I'm like, what are you looking for? They're like, just the good stuff. I'm like, oh, cool. You want the good things? Cool. Yeah. I had this stuff over here that I don't think is very good. I'm going to send you. But I forget what that person's looking for like the minute I leave that lunch. But if someone's like, oh, I'm looking for this, you know, we want to do a body horror. We want to do like a 90s yeah. rom-com. We want to do like, the more specific they are, the more I'm like, oh, cool. Like, that's going to stick in my head. And then I'm going to know how yeah. to help you. Like, the whole goal is to like, if I'm, you know, if I sit down with an executive, they're trying to get like, they have a job. They're trying to find certain material. So it's the same thing with a writer. It's like, what excites you? And it's also like, what are the themes that like you touch on? I deal with this, you know, with clients where it's like, maybe we've been in like a certain box where we've been doing a couple of these things, but it's like, okay, how do we find your thing, but in a budget of, it's over $100 million? Or how do we find your thing that's a TV show and it's a half hour, right? Like, so it's a matter of like, the more specific we can find out like what you want to do and where you think your skill set is and the stuff that's influenced you and how you want to leave your mark on this town, the better I can do my job.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's yeah, you're selling, you're trying to sell I mean, for lack of a better word, a product, but you're trying to say like, this is what this person does really well. This is how I'm trying to present them to the industry. And if someone just says, I can write anything, you know, I'll write horror, I'll write comedy, I'll write sci-fi, and then you're out and you're getting your mandates or you're having these conversations, you're not going to say, oh, my client can just write anything, as opposed to a client says, I love body horror. If that's the thing you like to do and you want to write that, and then you're in a meeting and someone says the word body horror, and all of a sudden that clicks in your head and you go, well, of course, you know, Tony would be great for that. I don't write body horror.
Well, that does that badly. Do you prefer a writer to have a certain number of boxes when you're first meeting with them? Or are you, if they're like, I like a whole bunch of genres, do you recommend that they focus? Because that's a question I know I get asked a lot. It's like, should I be writing everything or should I be writing, you know, a specific genre?
Yeah, I think it's helpful if you've tried a bunch of genres and you can figure out kind of where you're good at. Also, like, not every writer is going to be able to write everything really well. Some people will, but you also find that first thing you sell or the first thing you set up kind of helps define which path you're going down. So yeah, if Tony doesn't want to write body horror, but his manager's been like, dude, I know we can sell this, let's do it. And then all of a sudden Tony's the body horror guy, like he's going to lose his mind. So I think it's helpful if when I meet writers earlier in their careers or they're not signed yet, I want to see a range of material And then I can help say, hey, I think, you know, this is marketable right now. Like, this isn't, but this is super voicey. Like, this shows that you can write. Like, that's helpful. But then at the same time, if someone's got like, hey, here's like my 7 sci-fi scripts, like I still hope they're like within the realm of like the genre of sci-fi. Like, those are different.
Yeah.
It's not just the same thing again and again and again.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Right. But then, because one of the challenges I have, because, you know, obviously people ask me all this stuff as well. And what I see, I read a lot of scripts a year from that you don't read, you don't have to read. and sometimes people, well, A, they get really attached to their early drafts of things. And if they are experimenting in genres, they'll write a really bad one, but they'll think it's good. And, and I sort of, so there's always that challenge of like when, how much writing do you do before you're willing to, before you are ready to show it to anybody, and finding that sort of, you know, I think we talked to a guy who, ended up being a showrunner on a massive show that it's gone out of my head right now, but he said he treated it like being an airline pilot, where it's like, I do my 10,000 hours. I knew it was 10,000 hours. I was going to suck for that time, but by the end of that, I was going to have something that was going to be worthwhile to show to someone like you. So how do you suggest they navigate that idea of like, I need to write a bunch of scripts. I need to get better before I can have a manager. Do I spend that time dabbling in other genres and then have things, and just how do I manage preparing for a manager, I suppose?
Yeah. Can I say I don't know? That's like a great
point. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, look, I think the process for everyone is going to be a little bit different.
Yeah.
I think if you can get those, like, those bad scripts out of you before you get the good ones, like, it kind of doesn't – like, if no one's going to see them, it doesn't really matter whether they're the same genre or different genres or pilots and features or whatever. I think it's kind of when you start getting that initial feedback from – your friends, if you're, you know, you've built up a peer group, whether it's in real life or online, of other aspiring screenwriters or writers, and they're giving you honest feedback. Like, there's a difference between like nice and kind, and you want people to be kind to you and be like, hey, this, like, I see there's passion here, but it's not working yet, versus nice of like, oh yeah, no, this is great. Like, keep going. So if you can find those people who are kind and like actually help, like, have your best long-term interest at heart, then I think, you know, once you've gotten some straight feedback and you're getting like kind responses, like, no, this is actually good, like, we should share it, I'm willing to share it myself, you know, with whoever, like, that's probably when you're, when you've put your time in.
Right.
Yeah. What's that, like, I mean, I guess we're kind of all talking about the same thing, but that moment when you're reading a script and you know, that this is now ready to send out to the world. Maybe you get one, or maybe you're developing one with a client and it's almost there. And then where is that threshold that says, okay, I'm ready to share? And or does that threshold shift depending on who you're sharing it with, if you have a closer relationship, et cetera?
Yeah, look, it's so many different variables. Yeah. I mean, even back when you're asking like, what are qualities I look for before signing someone? Like, there's some people who are amazing on a page and just like they have that thing. And there's some people who are like so good in a room and they can like pitch you like a bottle of water, like it's the best bottle of water you've ever had. And sometimes people are great at both, and ideally like both, but like not everyone's going to be a 5-tool player. I'm not going to be, you know, the best manager in every single category if we're like going to figure out categories or whatnot. So I play to my strengths. And so I think that's the same thing when you're trying to find a piece of material to go to market. Is there already heat on this writer, or is there a relationship, or do you know that like, hey, such and such place is looking for this? And like, no script's ever going to be perfect, especially at the writing stage. It's such a collaborative medium. You're going to have a director come on. They're going to have thoughts. You're going to have producers come on. They're going to have thoughts. You're going to have actors come in. They're going to have thoughts. Like, this thing's going to change 100 times by the time even you sell it and when it's shot, that I try and get things to the point where I'm like, I think this at least just gets you that next yes or that first yes, so you can start snowballing for those other yeses. So things don't have to be perfect.
Hooray. So speaking of the
market.
They
have to be good. They just don't have to be perfect.
Right. And what is good?
Well, maybe it's like things are never going to be perfect.
No.
You know, that's that. And so this aspiring to be that is, you know, it's so, but it's, that doesn't mean it, you know, there's so many people trying that are so talented trying to do lots of things, and there's lots of voices, but the ability to be collaborative and to shift and to know that even if you think your script is perfect, there's going to be a lot of other voices that come into the room and you have to be flexible. And
well, that goes back to not being an asshole.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. I mean, like, especially as you've become more confident in your writing, like, it's good to defend the decisions you've made on the page. But I mean perfect in the sense of, like, if you could just go make a movie by yourself, then great. Like, there's a version that you think, oh, this is perfect for me. But because you're going to have to go work with 100 other people,
right,
you have to be somewhat open that, hey, what the product – again, it is a product at the end of the day. But, like, what we're eventually going to sell or what people are eventually going to buy might be different, or they might want something slightly different than what you've put on the page.
Mm-hmm. We had a panel once, and we had a lady who put her hand up in the audience, and she said she got a random meeting with an agent, and he read the script and he's like, there's promise here, bring it back when it's perfect. And she didn't write another word for 18 months because she was like, I didn't know what to do with that note. It was just the worst note, and it froze me because it's like, what's perfect? Is this perfect? I don't know. And she got completely in her own head and stopped writing. So I'm pleased that we don't have to be perfect. So I just want to move on because there's been a lot of talk about 2024 being a terrible year.
Mm.
What's it been like for you? What's going on out there?
The first 6 months or so were definitely tough, and it was like post strike, and so people were figuring out their budgets and what they wanted to make. The last 6 months have felt like that it's been opening up a little bit more again. I don't know. I feel like we're in a town that creates like dreams, and we make, you know, TV shows and movies, which is just like so optimistic if you're going to like go out and be like, hey, we're going to build a product and it's going to require like thousands of people to do it, and we don't even know if there's a market for it. Like, that's kind of insane. You have to be like super glass half full for that. And at the same time, our industry loves to be down about everything. So mm-hmm. I don't know. Sometimes it's hard to like, there, you know, everyone's throwing out that phrase, survive till 25. When it comes back to like writing, like the great thing about that, it's like it's you and your laptop, or it's, you know, mm-hmm. like, nothing should take away from the time of just like honing your craft and putting that next thing out there and making yourself a better writer, like regardless of what's going on out there.
Okay. So, but have people been, I mean, people have been buying things. I mean, you've got your clients have
yeah, found so there, work. There's been like much more buying, I would say, since like August, September of this year than in the first 6 months. So that has turned around.
And is there anything going on out there? I mean, are they buying, I mean, are you, if someone came to you with a spec script today and it was amazing, any optimism that you could actually sell it, or is it more about introducing that writer into other projects or what?
No, there's been like a number of spec sales this year, which people are like, oh, it's like the 90s all over again, which is, I think, you know, predates all of us. But
you guys, not me.
But there was like this heyday in the 90s where it felt like, and I've spoken to producers too, where like it was kind of like this, where like they're like, oh, you could like set up, you know, sell a spec by lunch and then just go and like celebrate that you sold that spec by lunch.
Yeah, man.
And then we've been in this period for the past couple of years where things have to be so packaged before you take them out. So the idea of taking out a clean spec with no director, no, you know, maybe a producer attached, like just like was like, you didn't do that. And in the past couple of months, those have started happening again. So it's actually a great time to have a cool spec.
Wow. Without any packaging, or not a lot, not the sort of packaging. Packaging, by the way, if you don't know, if you're listening, is having a whole bunch of people connected to your or attached to your script before it goes into the hands of the people with the cash.
Correct. Yeah. A director, an actor, or as we like to lovingly say, a piece of talent.
Yeah. Yes, I know. I've received that feedback. Like, this is great. Come back when you have everybody assembled and then we'll talk. And it's like, well, but isn't that what you do? And
I found that as well.
You have
a certain on a certain level with producers will say, it's great, you know, do you have any money? do you know any A-list talent that we can help? And it's like, I wrote the script. I did this. This is my expertise. But you know, during certain tough times. So what's your I mean, I'm sure it's case by case, but your threshold for, okay, I think this project can go out with just a director attached or a director, or do you always have a certain threshold you try to reach when you're packaging and taking things out?
No, there's not always a certain threshold.
Yeah.
Again, I think so much is determined by who I'm talking to and I know what they're looking for and mm-hmm. what they can also sell upstairs. Like, again, like not to take the creative out of it, because so much of it is creative driven, but I try to put myself in like the shoes of the people I'm trying to sell to. It's like, you know, it might be the most amazing piece of material, but like if they can't convince their boss and they're saying, oh, hey, here's the impediments I'm going to hit, or here's what I need checked off. Like, I know that's my assignment then to go check those boxes off for them. Just take away reasons for them to say no.
Yeah. Yeah. Like this thing you mentioned earlier about like getting the first yes. And it feels like probably you're the first yes. And then, you know, the director you attach is the next yes, an actor you attach, and then getting that first executive and that next one and that next one. And there's a series of yeses as opposed to I write one thing and everyone says yes at the same time, which would be cool, but it doesn't work that way.
No, it's not.
Are there genres that are particularly hot at the moment?
So there does seem to be, everyone likes a good, I mean, there's some things that are like perennial that are always, and then it's like they're, you know, kind of like what's the subgenre of it. Action always works. Horror always works. I mean, genre in general always works. There's definitely been a push for kind of like sexy thrillers and pretty much whatever was big in the 90s is like big again.
Really?
Yeah, we're kind of – so I mean, I hear comps all the time. And now I'm going to blank on them, of course. But like what's the 90s action movie that feels – like the 2025 version, like of today, or what's the you know, the sexy domestic thriller that works, like that feels updated today. Like we don't want to just buy the script that didn't sell 30 years ago, but like how does it feel like it exists in today's culture? What like the big thing that everyone asks for, and you guys probably have heard this yourselves, but like there's always a why now. Mm-hmm. aspect when someone's trying to buy something. Like, why do we need to hear this story now? Or what makes this different? So when this is on our screens in a year's time, at, you know, or whatever, that it stands out from any other version of this story that could be told at the moment.
Okay. I'm flabbergasted that they're talking 90s. There has been a tendency, at least at the box office or at the movie theater, that we're in a very revisionist sort of period where we've been remaking stuff on TV and film. Are you seeing that trend continue, or is it, are they starting to actually, and also like established IP and all of that, it seems to be the only scripts that were being made for quite some time. Are you seeing original concepts out there doing things now? Yeah,
look, yes, but we're still in that phase where we're going to remake American Psycho for some reason. Even with like an amazing director and an amazing actor. Like I don't get that.
No. How many of them have worked, by the way? How many of these remake where they remake have actually been
Presumed Innocent seemed to be a big success for Apple. But the degree of what that means for them is different.
I don't know why we're digging through stuff that worked to redo it. What's it? Matlock. Yeah. Oh, yeah. But at least I revisited it, I suppose.
Yeah. But there's still original ideas that poke through. And I think it's like what's 90% kind of familiar and what's 10% different. And that alone like can be categorized as an original idea in the sense of like what works in the marketplace.
Yeah. I just wanted to ask before lately, there's this rise of sort of outside Hollywood, you know, streaming platforms or online content, and or, you know, people don't like the word content, but a lot of those sites are like, we're content. And are you finding opportunities for clients outside sort of the traditional film and TV world to sort of keep the lights on? Because it seems like there's a lot of work in those arenas.
I'm not focused there.
Okay.
I'm sure there is. I mean, I have some clients that have worked in the commercial space, and I think that's great. But again, like my focus is on like traditional film and TV and streaming at the moment because that's – I can't do everything.
Yeah.
And
Why not, Sean?
Yeah, why not?
Come on.
So I'd rather be like fairly well-versed in like the somewhat narrow field of that as opposed to being like, oh, great. Like I'm also going to figure out how to like get your play set up for, you know, in New York and you wrote this commercial, you should do this and
fine, I'll put the play script away.
And like, let's develop your TikTok content. You know, like that's just, and also just it's a different realm for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I have a couple of quick ones.
Yeah.
There's a lot of conversation about and I was having this conversation the other day about should a writer who's unsigned immerse themselves in deadline variety, what's going on in the industry, you know, be really aware, or so that you kind of know what's out there. Or is that in some way debilitating, which has sort of been my argument, because it can be I'm chasing the crowd rather than focusing on my craft. You know, I should be writing what I'm good at and getting better at that. And the more I get concerned about what Hollywood is buying at the moment, the more I distract myself potentially. Do you have a view on that?
I think if you've got a rep or reps that are pretty communicative with you and you figure out what you want to do.
No, this is pre-rep. If you don't have a rep.
Pre-rep. Okay, so pre-rep. I think it's good to keep an eye on it just generally. Like that's kind of your ear in the industry. And you got to keep in mind that every release that comes out, it's like someone's not like going out and scooping and like, oh my God, did you hear Universal is going to like buy this movie? Like Universal told them that they bought this movie. So like there's a version of it's like performative. They want that information out there. And sometimes there's this strategic reason for it. But in general, I think it's helpful to be like following what people are buying just genre-wise or what, you know, if you're trying to put together something and you don't see anyone buying it, like that A could mean there's like an amazing opportunity for you to sell this idea that no one else is buying, or it's pointing you in the direction of saying, hey, maybe work on something else right now.
Right.
And it's also helpful because we watch a lot what's on TV or what's in theaters right now, but that was put in development years ago and sold years ago. And like even if you look at like FX and the Emmys this year, it's like Shogun and The Bear. And like those two shows are like so hard to sell right now. So if you were only watching like, oh, well, it's this, it's like, no, you have to go also be aware of what people are buying now because it's different than what they're putting out on TV or in theaters.
And the only way you find out what's buying now is by reading the trades rather than watching TV.
Yeah, before you're wrapped. I think it's a great way to have like an ear into Hollywood.
Right. Okay. Yeah, because our whole conversation is before you're wrapped, because I know I've heard discussions with people in your job or other and signed writers and you know, successful writers, and sometimes they give a note. They're like, what advice do you have for, you know, if you've got this year? Oh, we'll just talk to your rep or just go out and get a rep.
Yeah.
And it's like, but that's the obstacle.
That's the hurdle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I suppose we should transition to that a little bit about how we get an unsigned writer signed. Can we spend a moment there?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
So what general advice would you have for someone who's not signed, who's listening to you right now, about what they can do to get themselves ready? I know we've talked about not being an asshole, but in terms of the like how many scripts maybe they should have or what you look for?
Yeah. I don't like to put a number on scripts, but I think you have to have a handful. And I think you would actually have done this in the past where you sent me a script that was really interesting. Mm. And then I was like, okay, send me something else that this writer wrote. Because I want to see what they've done in a slightly different budget or genre. And you're like, oh, this is all that she has so far.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's just tricky because when I go and try and sell one thing or, you know, Tony, if you're an exec and I send it to you and you're like, this is amazing. Like we can't make this, but like, we're looking like this voice is amazing. Like send me a pilot that I can send up. Yeah. I'm like, oh, they don't have a pilot. They're like, okay, well then come, like, why are we here? Like you kind of need to show that you can do it multiple times. I think having like, again, I was gonna say, I don't wanna put a number on it, but you should have a handful, like 3-4 things that you're proud of and that probably showcase a certain side of your writing. Just so when you're in that general or with an executive who's helping you, or you're sitting down with a manager, you're like, oh, hey, here's this, or here's this, or here's this. And it's, you're showing that you're putting the time, the effort into it. And it's not just, oh, here's my side thing. I wrote one thing. Can you go? And this is your lottery ticket. Thank you. Like, pay me my money.
Right. Right.
I find sometimes I'll be talking to writers, and they'll be working on a project for, you know, a while, and they'll talk about it. And then I'll say, well, you know, what's it about? Like kind of not pitch it to me, but just kind of tell me how you would tell it to someone else. And we've seen it in writers groups and things, and they'll say, oh, it's, it's about a guy. And you're like, you don't have this figured out. Do you, you know, and you're bringing writers or you're meeting writers or you have your clients, are you trying to, because I know this is what you're doing. You're saying, okay, we're going to do like a one page of this, or we're going to send this out to the industry. Are you encouraging them as well to figure out these things, like the sort of the marketing side of their scripts, break this down as a log line, as a synopsis, so that they too have the language that you're sending them into a meeting and they actually can articulate their own script. Because sometimes it feels like writers have a tough time doing that side of things.
Yeah. I'll ask my clients for a log line sometimes because usually they're better at coming up with them, mm-hmm. you know, but also there's a lot of work that goes into just crafting a log line. So I think it's helpful when we're having those discussions. Again, this is like we're talking about writers that are pre-rep. Like mm-hmm. I think you probably should come up with what's the – it's this meets this, right? Like the mm-hmm. most classic, boring, and don't just pick like the two biggest movies of the year because like everyone comps those things. but also, you know, come up with like a really compelling log line and figure out how to then pitch that in, you know, it's one sentence and then it's three sentences and it's a handful of sentences. Mm-hmm. Which is, I'm totally taking that advice from, I think, Marshall Herskovitz, who's mm-hmm. Ed Zwick's producer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They did 30-something.
Yeah.
No, I just, favorite shows yeah,
I just yeah. read the book.
Yeah. yeah. But he's got this great piece of advice. I mean, like, you know, everyone wants to figure out their elevator pitch, but like, you should be able to like pitch your story in one sentence. Mm-hmm. And then assuming like, oh, that's interesting. Then like pitch it in three sentences and you get a little bit more. And with each successive time, you can get a bit more information into it. Yeah. But I think that helps from even before you start writing, or if you're in the middle of a script and you don't know kind of how it, where it's going to go next, how are you going to tell someone this 90-page idea if it's feature in 15 seconds?
Yeah.
And I think that can just be like a good like North Star yeah. for writers.
I like, I have two children. I say in my book, pitching children is really interesting because mm-hmm. they are bullshit detectors quicker than anybody because mm-hmm. their attention span is, you know, childlike. And so keeping them engaged over a couple of sentences and getting them, I mean, obviously you're not pitching them a horror, but it's just really interesting to see, like, if you're explaining this or you're, and I say to writers, if you're in at a cocktail party and you're trying to explain your story, if you're telling this incredibly boring story at a cocktail party, people are going to wander off, you know, so it's up to you to try to kind of hone a compelling story around your script. It doesn't have to be long, but just make it, you know.
Yeah, I think Scott Frank would say, like, spin a good yarn. Just, yeah. like, mm-hmm. spin a good yarn. And this actually ties into, like, the first yes. If you think of it more like, well, this first line is – you need someone to say yes, and then they read the next line, and that goes to for screenplays yeah. as well. Each page needs to be the next yes because it's so easy contest with rep that you can just say, okay, there were 12 great pages, but then things have – there's some no's.
Yeah. oh, yeah. Yeah. So, okay, so they have a handful of scripts. Mm-hmm. They've shown them to people who are not reps, who are not industry people, or maybe other – preferably other writers or people who give them kind but honest feedback. I'm just rehashing what we've
yeah,
discussed
yeah.
Because yeah, the more you get it out there, I think it's also you get more comfortable having strangers read your script. Because I get a lot, even when I message with someone and I say, what's your script about? Oh, I can't tell you might steal it. Mm. And it's like, well, okay, but how are you going to get better if you're not letting anybody read what you're doing? So so feedback's important, having more scripts, genre, explore genres. Okay, so let's say they have all these things. One thing I wanted to talk about was in a script and how you pitch. People have a tendency to pitch what happens in the script. They don't tend to pitch the feelings involved in the script. Can we have a brief conversation about how important it is that you feel something when you read a script from an unsigned writer versus it is technically correct? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like of course.
How do you feel? Where do you sit there?
Well, I think like ultimately at the end of the day, like that's okay, so John Wick is a great example, right? Like people go to John Wick because like you get to see Keanu Reeves kick ass for, you know, and kill like 200 people, mm-hmm. whatever. It's like yeah. absurd. But like the whole reason you're on that journey with him is because at least, you know, the first one is like he lost his dog.
Right.
Right. And so like everyone can feel that in a certain way. So I think stuff can happen, but if we're not grounded in why do we care about this person going on this journey, whatever it is, you're going to lose the audience right away. It's the difference between like, I mean, it's funny. People will live stream watching people play video games.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that works for some people, but like there's no like emotional content there. It's just they're watching like people run around and play like, you know, does someone play Call of Duty? But right. if you want to like write John Wick, like you have to have that that feeling, that element to it that's going to attach, the audience is going to attach to.
Right. Because a lot of the books out there for unsigned writers and teaching them how to write is all about structure, and it's all about, like Robert McKee and his story and his roadmap and all that, which I believe is important. You've got to know what you're doing. But it doesn't really get into the feeling stuff, which is what I base my whole thing on. Because we've all read scripts that it's like, well, this is technically sound, but I'm shrugging my shoulders, versus a script that might not be entirely technically great, but you're on the ride, you're feeling something.
Yeah.
But getting into that feeling can sometimes be difficult for a writer who isn't very experienced or who, I feel like that's the messy bit. You can read a book about how to do structure. What do you suggest to writers who you can feel are having like an emotional block, or it's like, oh, this is all here, this idea's here, but you're not digging deep enough, emotionally, you're not giving me something that I can feel? Do you have any advice to them?
So I would think I think ideas maybe come from like one of two like initial places. Like there's something personal that have dealt with or are going through, or that you want to touch on, like a theme, and then you figure out how to like put that on the page. And that's probably not the example that you're giving, because I think that's probably more like it's messy in terms of structure, but like it's clear that this is saying something or this is evoking some kind of feeling. The flip side is like, oh, we have like an amazing idea. Like, wouldn't this be a great movie? And I would think the problem is probably in the first like 15 pages, where we're just not invested enough in the character or characters to care. And it's probably even more like the first like 5 or 6 pages. So I think a way to do that would be like just read those first 5 or 6 pages, or ask, your peer group, does this character feel different? Do we care about this person? And it's a lot of subtle things. Like, I mean, we were kind of texting about this, and I was thinking like, how do you show that? And have you guys watched Black Doves yet?
No.
Okay.
It's Keira Knightley, right?
It's Keira Knightley and Ben Whishaw. Mm-hmm. I just binged it this past weekend.
We're going to get into movie moments. Hold
okay. So, but anyway, but the point is like, there's moments where you can, and we'll give examples, but I think it's like, if your characters aren't there in the first couple pages, like the rest of the plot doesn't really matter, because when you're on page 70 and there's a giant action sequence, it's like, if I don't remember like why or I care about this person, I'm just not going to be curious about how they dismantle this next bad guy.
Right. My example is, which I think I've already mentioned, is that if you're walking down the street and you see a man dressed in a suit and he's on a cell phone and he's sobbing, you're instantly going to be like, well, that's interesting. Why? Because we're all nosy. So it's like, why is he sobbing? Why is he? Or we know that he's wearing a suit and he owns a phone.
Yeah.
And we don't know anything else. And yet we're immediately engaged in, well, what's going on? I'm not suggesting every film start with a sobbing man holding a phone, but it's just because
yours do.
No, but totally. It's also, it's like, what time of day is it? Where is this man? Like, is it, is he by himself somewhere? Is this where you would not see a man with a suit, or is this where you expect to see a man with a suit?
Right.
All these things that can layer into to make something interesting or unique and bring more of that kind of the emotional and the feeling.
Yeah.
Out of it.
Yeah, because so many writers, again, in the structures element, have this feeling where they need to introduce everything about a character first and then they'll start the story. And what I keep trying to say is it's not the stuff you're introducing about the character is not where they live, where they sleep, what they eat for breakfast, or what mode of transport to go to the office. It's who
or
they
a
are.
Voiceover that says, my name is.
Yes.
This is where I'm from. Yes. And these are my wounds.
Yes.
But also, I just want to touch on, since you run the Write LA, screenwriting competition, when I'm reading scripts, so often I'm saying to myself, I just want to read something where in the first 10 pages, like you said, John, like there's a character, I know kind of what they want, I know who they are, I know kind of what the journey that I'm on. Just give me a character. And how many scripts, there's cool stuff, there's interesting stuff, but there's no character. I don't know what journey I'm on or why. And not that I need to know everything, but I think that that's something to definitely prioritize in those first 10 pages.
There's no secret, is there, to making someone care about a character? Is there?
I don't think so.
No. I think the more rounded they are, the more you know them as a writer, the more you know the character, the more you can infuse that onto the page, which leads me quickly to voice. Mm. you know, everybody talks about what's, you know, you're looking for original voice. You mentioned it. Do you have any more specifics on what that looks or feels like? Not, or is it the I know it when I see it kind of vibe?
It's so much than I know it when I see it. But I always appreciate people who clearly, like, they break the rules, but it's because they know they're breaking the rules. Like, they have put in those 10,000 hours, if you want to say. And it's, they just approach how, like, that literally at the end of the first page, like, I'll know whether someone has a voice or not. And sometimes there's a voice and the material's not there, or the, you know, like, it's not marketable for whatever reason, but the voice is undeniable. Mm. Yeah, I wish there was, I mean, I guess if I had to guess, it's like, it's not your first try at that first page. It's not your second try. It's like your eighth try at that first page. And after you've, like, probably, like, have been banging your head against the wall, that your, like, your voice actually comes out.
Right. Please don't say that it's how literary you are in your scene description setting up the original scene, because we see a lot of that where someone thinks the more flowery language or the more cute or witty or charming I am in the opening, you know, scene description, the more you're going to love me. And it's just awkward.
Oh, often. Yeah. No, I mean, some of my most favorite, like, first pages that stick out to me are, like, people who, like, have so little, like, in terms of, like, text on the page, but it just evokes that feeling, what, either of, like, the setting that they're trying to describe, or just how much they can bring an impact about with, like, a handful of words.
Yeah. I say sometimes clarity is kindness, and it's, yes. It's just in life, but on the page as well, where it's like, so what is, sounds good, but what is happening? What am I actually seeing?
Right. So okay. So quickly, query letter.
Yeah.
Are they useful?
Not really.
Okay.
I think it's got to, most of the time, a recommendation has to come, or a writer's got to come through a recommendation. That can be someone typically in the industry, which I know it's like, well, it's this chicken and egg thing. Yeah. But it's, I mean, it's even, you know, if you reach out to me and you're like, hey, this person was in the screenwriting competition, like, I actually think there's something here, like, you should take a look. Like, that goes a far way, like, a long way. Hmm. Or
I'm blushing.
Yeah. Which it's tough, but, like, I mean, the problem with the query letter, right, is the same thing that you said when someone's concerned that, like, I'm not going to tell you what my script's about because you're going to steal the idea. I mean, we see this all the time. Like, someone sued Paramount because they're like, oh, you stole my Top Gun idea. It's like, no, you didn't.
Yeah.
No, you didn't. And also, every single idea right now is being written 10 times over. So it's just like, you should talk about your idea. Unless you have, like, some, like, unless you've, like, come up with some, like, Chris Nolan level, like, idea that, like, no one else is thinking of, like, no one's going to steal your idea. And if they do, it's probably not going to be as good as yours.
Yeah.
Or you're not going to write, they're not going to write it as good as you.
That's exactly what I say. No one can write your script because you're you and you've lived your life. And if you gave the same idea to three different people, they'd come up with three different scripts.
Yeah.
And they'd be dramatically different.
That's why people pitch on projects, because the producers are hearing different takes.
Yeah,
it's all the same idea. Like, literally, everyone gets the same graphic novel or the book or the idea or the news article, whatever, and they come in with completely different things and different ways in. And so no one's going to do the exact same thing as you. So if you are just confident that, like, you're the best person to tell this story, or you're going to prove, hey, my version of the story is the best, then go for it.
So how does someone get a literary manager in late 2024, early 2025, when this thing gets released?
So I do think, like, it's, so much is a recommendation, right? So, but it can even just be distant. Like, I don't necessarily have to, like, know the person that's going to refer. I just want to know that they have some standing in the industry. And that can be, like, I've had, like, DPs recommend scripts to me. Like, you know, obviously they read material all the time and they're making decisions themselves about what they want to shoot and not shoot. But I don't think they're pretending that they know what a manager is looking for. They just know, like, hey, this resonated or this stood out. Screenplay competitions, good, I think there's
good ones though.
There's a handful that I think are worthwhile. Yours obviously being one of them. But a lot of them, you know, just do some digging and see if there's, like, any actual connection, or winners in the past are all repped, because it's not worth spending, you know, your $100 submission to have someone read your script if it's not going to end up somewhere.
Right. So, okay, so screenplay competitions, people in the industry having a raft of scripts ready to go. And I guess that's just part of putting it out there, putting it out in a competition, yeah. trying to find people, trying to hustle, I suppose, until you get, but you've got to have the stuff to hustle. And then when they have the meeting with you, don't be an asshole and have more than one script that you're proud of to show and have some sort of a more specific vision of what you see your career looking like rather than just like, I'll do anything.
Yeah, but and I think that's also kind of, I mean, it's like, what do you watch and what do you, like, what inspired you to yeah. start writing? The writing is an incredibly, like, insular and, I mean, unless you have a writing partner, but still, like, it's like a very time-consuming process. So, like, if you're going to sit behind your laptop for like hours on end and be thinking about this, like ideally you're motivated from like something. You're not just yeah. doing this because you think it's gonna like be a paycheck or something. So just talking about like the movies or the writers that inspire you and that you would love to emulate, whether career-wise or output-wise.
Okay. We need to move on because we're running out of time.
Yeah.
So did we have some questions from the audience?
Did we
run through them already?
We ran through almost all of them. There was just one about IP, but more specifically, someone creating their own IP. Have you ever suggested that to a client? Has the client suggested that to you? They write a self-published book, or I've even heard of writers, you know, they write an article about the pilot that they want to write, and then they get it somewhere through a connection, published anywhere, basically, and then they pitch based on that IP. Have you been in that arena or made those suggestions?
A little bit. I think unless you're also a novelist or you're mm-hmm. also a journalist, like it's you're trying to circumvent the process and like you're going to spend mm-hmm. so much time. The one thing I recommend, and this has also been kind of successful now, is write your idea as a short story. A lot of those have been getting sold or set up. And it's like the promise of the idea, and it's usually quicker to write out than a script. But other than that, I'd be like, just go spec it. Mm-hmm. If before you like, oh, I'm gonna like write this graphic novel and then I'm gonna get it published, and like, you know, these are all hurdles in and of themselves. So I would not recommend creating your own IP generally.
The short story thing I have heard from producers as well recently, where they said they've had projects set up based on a short story, and she suggested to me, she's like, even if you have the script already written, write the short story version, because sometimes that's your sales pitch, and then we get to have the screenplay just, after. So,
just inside baseball, what does a short story sell for? If you sell a short story, what price range? What do you get?
Well, it could be like nothing if you're just like doing a shopping agreement.
Yeah.
But then it's probably like the same option fees that a book could have. So it's usually like, you know, X price against the sales price, which is like 10 times that. So mm-hmm. it might be like 10,000 against 100,000. Right. And obviously, but like, you know,
sure.
The moon is like, you know, for the right thing. And again, yeah. if it's packaged, right. Like I think, Ed Berger and Austin Butler just went out attached to a short story, and again, that's package. It's a whole thing. Yeah. So, like that sold in the marketplace, and that sold for a really high number. But yeah. that was because it, you know, people were also buying. So they, the two of them attached to it.
They attached themselves to a short story.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, because that could go wrong so many ways in a script.
Definitely. But don't tell the execs that. Yeah. Who bought that? Come on.
No. It's perfect. Yeah. Okay. Well, firstly, thank you for coming in.
Yeah, thank you.
We're going to move on to our movie moments. And mm-hmm. Did you bring one? Do you want to lead us off? Our movie moments are where we pick a film or a piece of a film that either works for us or doesn't work for us.
Okay.
Do you have anything like specifically stands out for you that like was meaningful or is meaningful or is a good example of what you believe film or TV should be? Do you have anything that pops into your head or do you want us to just do it?
I'll take a stab. I'm going to be like totally off than what
there's
you
no
guys
wrong.
Are doing. Yeah. So one of my, and this comes back to like characters that we care about and also not necessarily having to have your character defined in like immediately, mm-hmm. like it comes over time. We should be interested in them within the first five pages. But Begin Again is one of my all-time favorites. John Carney with Mark Ruffalo, another Keira Knightley project, actually. Have you guys seen it?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, it's a music.
Okay.
Music
drama. So cancel your plans the rest of the day.
Okay.
And go watch the movie. And so I don't want to give it away. Like give some, but anyway, it's a complex.
I assume he becomes the Hulk at some point.
He does, right? He does. He rips off his clothes. There's these little moments between Mark Ruffalo and I think it's Catherine Keener who plays his estranged wife. And there's the obvious way of like, oh, you think, oh, here's this guy and he's been in a midlife crisis and like he's now divorced from his wife and he's got this cool job in the music industry. Like he's probably fucking around on her. And you find out that's not at all the case. And there's these like little moments where and you've seen it, so you'll remember this. But so two moments, like one, they're having a quiet conversation about their daughter who's like upstairs and it's the day and he's in smoking a cigarette and she's like, you can't smoke in the house. But then also like she's like, give me the cigarette. So they're like hiding the cigarette from their daughter while they're having a conversation. And it's this nice moment where you can see this history between the two of them. And then there's a couple minutes later or sometime other later in the movie, he's taking a shower at home and he's kind of like flirting with his, you know, estranged wife who's in the bedroom and she's just like over it with him. But before she walks out of the room, she like peeks back in towards the bathroom at him. And you can tell that like his charm still has, still works on her and she still has feelings for him. And it's these two, like it's so much direction. Obviously, John Carney wrote and directed that, but it's these little character moments, and you can two parents could have a conversation about their child in like any room, but the fact that you're giving them like a cigarette and they're trying to hide that from their daughter, but also like it speaks to their dynamic. Like you could do that scene so many different ways, and it wouldn't work. But the way it works in this movie, I think is really effective.
Okay.
Yeah, these characters like existed before the movie started, and they'll exist after.
Oh, yeah. You drop in, you drop out. That's it. Yeah.
All right. Well, we're out of time for our two, so we'll save our movie moments.
I'm sorry.
No. That was a good one because, again, that speaks to the – it's funny. Every movie moment we've mentioned so far and will mention, and you have backed that up, are small moments in films. And again, one of the advice I'm constantly giving writers is because they get obsessed with – every page has to be a page turner. You know, it has to be something dramatic and big. And it's like you need time for the small bits so that we, the audience, can really get inside what's going on and the dynamics of relationships and how what you're doing to the characters is impacting them and how they're shifting. And it's the small moments. And being brave enough and confident enough to put a small moment into your screenplay is, I find, a real turning point in a writer's journey as they're learning the craft, because when you start starting, everything's got to be loud and busy.
Well, so, the big moments only matter if it's preceded by some small moments that build to that big moment.
But most
catharsis and all that.
But learning that is really hard because you think, oh no, it's going to be boring. The writer's going to be bored. You know, the reader's going to be bored. And it's like, no, that's the reverse. Anyway, given that we have no more time, we do a piece of Aussie trivia every episode. So I have one for you. You ready?
Okay. Yeah.
Don't look over my shoulder. The original Mad Max movie, Mel Gibson, because 1979. By the way, I'm Australian, in case you're wondering about the accent. It was filmed around Melbourne in 1979. It was made for $350,000 Australian dollars, which is about $220,000 US. And for a long time, it had the Guinness Book of World Records record for the largest budget to box office dynamic, because it was made for $220,000 US and it earned – anybody want to guess what it earned at the box office?
I know this number, but it's escaping me, so I'm not going
to... $100 million.
No way.
And so it was this little Australian film from George Miller had the biggest difference between what it cost and what it earned until was beaten by Blair Witch. Yeah.
Damn found footage.
Australian films. Why aren't we making Australian films? Why aren't we making those things?
They're making tons of Australian films.
But are they any good?
I don't know, but they have a giant tax credit over there. Yes. So that's where everyone's shooting.
Yes, they're shooting American films in Australia.
They are.
But they're not shooting Australian films. If you look at that, we'll get into that another
day. That is now an Australian film. I don't know what to tell you.
Well, that's what they do. So, yeah, anyway, Scriptmate, we're done. Thank you so much,
cool. Thanks,
Sean, for coming in. Sean Woods from Forward. What is your technical title? You're more than just a literary manager now, aren't you?
I don't really do titles. You can call, but like I guess I'm the head of film and TV. But
all right.
Yeah.
So send all of your spec scripts to Sean.
All of them. Send me all your query letters.
So send them to Tim, and then Tim will send them
Tim will vet.
Yeah. Well, actually, that's why I have Write LA, the screenplay competition. So enter the competition. Scriptmate is brought to you by Write LA, which is what we're talking about. It's also a website where you can get all sorts of information about writing, learn about my script consulting services, because I do provide feedback and I am kind, and get all the details for our annual screenplay competition, which is currently open for entries. You can go to write-la.com for all the details, write-la.com. And if you want to enter, which we forgot in our last podcast, we have a special discount code exclusively for listeners of this podcast. So you can enter either our via our website, Film Freeway or Coverfly. If you don't know what they are, you can Google them. You get a 10% discount if you type in the word pod, P-O-D, pod, for a 10% discount on our entry fee. Our theme music was written and performed by the Australian band The Swarm and my friend Francis Leach. Big thanks to them. And our beautiful graphic was designed by my talented daughter, Claire Schulberger. So thank you for listening. We're very grateful. We'll be back with more. But for now, say goodbye, Tony.
Goodbye.
Thanks for having me, guys.